I'm used to it. I'm very comfortable being alone in the wilderness, but I also know my limits, and I have a tremendous respect for Mother Nature. I'm always mindful of the fact that no matter how much you love nature, nature does not love you back. Nature doesn't care if you live or die. It's just a force you need to recognize and respect.
I agree. That was so, so ready. Inside the line, the Catskills. This episode is brought to you by Scenic Route Guiding. If you're ready to hit the trails, make sure you take the scenic route. Our guides are here to help you with your goals, big or small. Check out the Scenic Route Guiding and Gear Rentals on Instagram and Facebook for more information. Also, if you mention the podcast, you can get 10% off. Use the code MOUNTAINLION. 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 All right. So Harold, I had this facts. I found this facts today. Listen to this stuff. You ready?
Ready.
New York State parks saw a record setting 78.4 million people in 2021, up 427,000 from the previous year. And park attendance has been rising 41% since 2008. Isn't that crazy?
That is crazy. And I can certainly attest to that. So a lot of people out there, certainly in 2020 and 2021 too. Amazing.
It's crazy. And I really want to, I mean, up 427 from the previous year. That's half, almost half a million.
Yeah, that's huge.
It's of course it happens. Especially when something goes on, when people, they're making a stay in your house, people want to get out. So excellent. So welcome everyone to Inside the Land of the Catskills. I'm Stosh, your host. I'd like to welcome my friend Harold here, who's going to talk about his adventure he had in the Catskills for 14 straight days. Harold, say hi, buddy.
Hey, Stosh. How you doing?
I am doing fantastic. I have just, coming back from work. It was pretty a crazy day, like weather-wise, actually.
Oh, really?
Yeah, up here it was like 45 degrees and sunny.
Oh, wow. Nice. Yeah, we had kind of a warm day, too.
Yeah.
Nice for a change.
Yeah, it is. But that also means it's going to make the conditions and the trails crazy.
Yeah, we're into the freeze-thaw cycle, which is what makes those trails so slick.
Freeze-thaw and then slush, no slush, potatoes.
Yeah.
It's all intertwined to one big, weird New York State winter.
Yep.
Well, I'd like to thank monthly subscribers Katrina Weining, Darren White, John Comiskey, Vicky Ferreira, and Jim C. Thank you guys very much for donating to the show monthly. I really appreciate it. Harold, you having anything to drink tonight to ease the pain?
I am. I thought I'd select something local or fairly local. So I'm drinking Cooperstown Select Straight Bourbon Whiskey tonight by Cooperstown Distillery.
Excellent. That's right next to me.
Yeah, it's very smooth. And I picked this up at the Strickland Hollow Bottle Shop in Delhi.
Nice.
Run by Erica Pellegrino, one of our comrades on Catskill Mountain Search and Rescue.
Yeah. Excellent. That's great. I didn't know she had Cooperstown whiskey.
Yeah. She's got a lot of local stuff up there.
Yeah. I have to. Yeah. I have to go back there and check it out because we went there a couple times, my wife and I. And I give Erica a shout out a couple episodes ago with when I was with Rev Spirits.
Right.
So she has some cool stuff she does. And if you're in the Delhi area, she's in Delhi. It's called Strickland Hollows. Check it out. Really cool stuff. It's all local. Everything's local there. So
absolutely. Yeah.
So it's great. Excellent. I just made probably like 2 hours ago, my world famous eggnog. So I have the eggnog and the Beaver Kill bourbon. That's from
nice.
Roscoe.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I better put that in the notes.
Erica has that too. I got a bottle of that from her shop. Yeah, that's good stuff.
It is incredible.
Yeah.
I didn't know she had that. I mean, she must have added a lot of stuff since I've been there.
Yeah, we were up there a few months ago. It's a pretty good selection.
Yeah, excellent. So, any previous hikes there, Harold?
Yeah, I just did Cotterskill High Peak on Sunday. You know, just after the big ice storm on Friday, we got up there Sunday, and there was already a nice trench. And if you stayed in the trench, you had no problem. Didn't really need snowshoes because the trench was pretty firm. You know, it's yeah. hard packed. But if you wanted to go your own way, you definitely needed snowshoes on Sunday. The crust was not hard enough to really hold you.
Did you take the north access?
I went from, yeah, the north ascent. I started at the Plattekill Clove, PA, and just walked up the long path all the way around to the north side and then up.
Nice.
I didn't want to take on Hurricane Ledge by myself with all that ice.
No. That would have been crazy.
Yeah.
Definitely need full-on crampons for that. So anybody...
Yeah, and a companion would be good too.
Oh, yeah. Definitely.
So it was solo.
Yeah, so if any listeners, do not go up the south side access unless you have a extra hiker with you and full on crampons. Definitely exactly. One of the steepest spots in the Catskills.
Yeah.
It's awesome. Cool. It was there a lot of ice up there or were?
Yeah, there was, but interestingly, there had been no wind, so there was very little blowdown. You know, trees were all encrusted in ice and it was beautiful, but with no wind or really rocking around, they were all just standing there with the ice on them. So there wasn't that much damage in the area, you know, Tannersville and Haynes Falls and so forth. They seem to have dodged the bullet. I know other parts of Ulster County really got nailed by that storm.
Yeah. Well, good. That's good. Anybody who's listening, I am like off schedule. I've had so many interviews in the past week or so that this is going to be not airing until like 2 weeks from now.
No. Right,
a lot of people have reached out to me and be like, this is the only time I can interview. Mm-hmm. So I'm just like, but yeah. I kind of like to keep it at least a week beforehand. So everybody's getting the conditions, but the conditions are going to change. I have no clue what's going on this week.
Oh, yeah. It's just from week to week or sometimes day to day.
Yeah. This week looks pretty weird with, you know, the temperature going from 40 and then it goes down to 19 in this weekend and then back up to 40 next week.
Yeah.
New York State never can make its mind up.
Yeah.
So I recently went up Plateau from Mink Hollow on the north side.
Yep.
I went up with my friends. We first started out without snowshoes and there was a nice trench going. And then all of a sudden I started falling in. This was like 3/4 of the way up to the junction and I fell in a tiny bit. And my friend fell out into his hip and it was hilarious. His first time ever falling into his hip. So getting out was pretty tough for him. I had to help him out.
Wow. Was it a spruce trap?
No. It was just a drift right in the...
Oh, wow.
Towards the top, there was some massive drips. I thought I had some pictures. I'll have to post some more pictures. Yeah. But when we got to the junction, we put on our snowshoes. It was his first time wearing snowshoes, so he didn't really want to do it. But I told him, "Trust me, it's just like putting on your micro spikes. You'll feel like you're inhuman, and you can take on anything." And he put them on, and he felt like that. He seriously was just like, "Oh, sweet, these are awesome."
Yeah.
But we started going up Plateau and his were not gripping that well. His crampons on the bottom of that were pretty, pretty good, but I don't think like they're my MSRs and has the side grips. Mm-hmm. So.
Yeah. That's Plateau is steep.
Yeah.
So you really need some traction even on your snowshoes going up that one.
So 1/4 of the way up, I told him that we got to turn around. I really don't feel like you're safe. Because he was just kept slipping and slipping.
Mm-hmm.
And that was about it. And that was it.
Yeah, it's a good call.
I don't like to do that kind of crap and put people in harm's way. So
yeah. How was he going down? Because I find it more challenging going downhill, a steep hill in snowshoes, especially when it's slippery. They almost turn into skis.
Yeah, he loved it somewhat. But he was skiing basically, but then he butt slid a lot.
Yeah.
Like the 3/4 of the way down, he was just butt sliding because he couldn't figure out how to walk downward without getting his front foot caught in the snow.
Yeah, that's tricky. You can really go right head over heels if you're not careful.
Yeah. But he said he can't wait to try them out again. I think his were a little big. I think he had some 30s. So those are huge. But I told him to check into getting some like 25s or 26s, something like that.
So what's the size number? Is that like the length in inches or?
Yeah. He had really, really long ones. And the bigger the size, a little bit wider they get, but the longer they are. So his was basically for probably like flat terrain, you know, parks or stuff like that, but not climbing. So excellent. Yeah, that's good. Catterskill High Peak, and then and then some plateau, a little bit of plateau. Beautiful times in the Catskills.
I just led a 3500 club hike up plateau in Sugarloaf about 3 weeks ago.
What was the conditions up there at that time?
It wasn't too much snow. There was a covering, but not a lot. I was mainly concerned about the ice on Sugarloaf, which is notorious for its icy ledges. But it wasn't too bad. We managed to get up and down with just micro spikes.
Sweet.
Yeah.
Excellent. Good times. So Harold's also a club hike leader. We'll be talking about that later. So great. How about we do some Catskill Mountain history, bud?
Let's do it.
All right. So I found this out previous episode I did. I had a Chris Van Klick on there, who is a historian of the Winnisook Club. And we were talking about some old history in the area around the Winnisook. And he mentioned about the Grand Hotel. And the Grand Hotel, I already had this ready for us. So I told him about it. He gave me a little bit more. So I have this book called Heart of the Catskills by Bob Studing. Have you ever heard of it?
Yes, I have.
Awesome book, right?
Yes, it is.
Great book with amazing pieces of history. So yes, I kind of took this from him because I read it. And I was intrigued, and I'll tell you about it afterwards about how me and Chris, because I was lost about something. So here's a little history about the Grand Hotel, which is located in Pine Hill. It was a hiker's hotel, or so it was characterized by many journalists who enthusiastically promoted this famous hostelry. Built by a group of investors, among them Ulster and Delaware Railroad President Thomas Cornell, the Grand Hotel, constructed high up on the side of Monka Hill above Pine Hill in the southern Catskills, opened up in the summer of 1881, just a few days before its nearest competitor, the Catterskill Hotel, and less than 24 hours prior to the assassination of the 12th President of the United States, James A. Garfield. Arnold Goyette, the most famous Catskill mountain hiker of all time, who had tramped in the Catskills for nearly two decades and had published his influential map of 2 years earlier, became greatly admired by this guest of the Grand. Originally intended to be called the Summit Mountain Hotel, the Grand Hotel, as it was ultimately named, not only provided its guests with the most luxurious and modern of facilities available at the time, it also offered them unbounded, vigorous outdoor activity and the promise of the healthiest natural environments. Possessing the famous diamond spring on site, whose crystal clear water flowed into a marble fountain constructed under a rotunda outside the entrance of the hotel, the Grand served fresh spring water to each of its 450 bedrooms every morning, the absolute purity of this beverage being celebrated throughout the Catskills. Situated near 40 miles from the Hudson River with pure air and lower population density, the Grand Hotel could boost, in addition, the most healthy environment, an obstructed view of the Southwest Slide Mountain, the highest peak in the Catskills. The incomparable prospect, it was said, excelled all other vistas, for it was, for the most part, unsettled wilderness, revealing little, if any, evidence of the blemishes of industrial civilization evident from the porches of its competitors. Thus, with the attention Goyette's map focused on Slide Mountain in the southern Catskills, aided by a culture of outdoors, which developed in America after the Civil War by railroad, which had reached this area below the hotel in 1871, and by the creation of the Catskill Forest Preserve in 1885. It is not surprising that the Grand Hotel during the 1880s quickly became one of the most widely praised and popular hotels. Variously described as a city unto itself, the Grand Hotel was one of the largest and most modern equipped hotels of the time. This large and imposing structure, with a front of almost 700 feet in length, straddled the Delaware-Ulster county line. So big was this building that it is said that the bar could be moved from one county to another as local liquor laws changed. In addition to seemingly countless rooms with running water and private baths, telegraph and a post office, a pharmacy with a resident physician, a grill, a Rathskeller, bowling alley, croquet grounds, swimming pool, tennis courts, and a nine-hole golf course with a clubhouse, the Grand Hotel also provided, for the enjoyments of its guests, a symphony orchestra directed by Louis J. Cornu, which performed at concerts and tea dances called Tea Descent, charging rates at $31 a week, three times the price of the most expensive smaller hotels.
Yeah.
So, yeah, pretty cool stuff.
$31 a week was a lot of money back then, man.
Back in the 1880s?
Yeah. Yeah, this would have been a very high-class exclusive hotel if they're charging rates like that. Yeah.
Especially where it's located, deep into the Catskills.
Yeah. Are you familiar with that site, where it was up there?
So
right up there by,
it's right across from Bel Air, right?
Yeah, right across the call from Bel Air, exactly.
So yeah, so
an awesome view in every direction.
Yeah, I was talking to Chris about, like, he mentioned it, and I said, where is this thing? Because I can't find it, like, anything, like, of you. You got to admit, that would leave a huge scar on the maps.
You would think, yeah.
Yeah, and it's not. So he showed me where it was, and I was like, wow, you can see a tiny bit, but nothing.
Yeah. Yeah, I had a friend who had a summer home up there, and went up to visit her, and was talking about the Grand Hotel, and she said, "Yeah, you're sitting right where the clubhouse used to be for the golf course."
Oh wow!
So I mean, the whole area has been redeveloped, and there's almost nothing left of the hotel or the site.
Yeah, when I saw a picture of it, I seriously thought it was like back into Pine Hill, like right on the there's that nice little. I don't know what it is, like a country estate that's pretty big up there on the side of Pine Hill right before Bel Air. And I thought that was it. And it's been like downsized, but no.
No.
The one thing that's he's funny, he told me when I said about the, that it straddled the two county lines, that yeah. One person could move from one bar to the other. He said that closing time would be at 2 o'clock in Delaware. And then everybody would move to Ulster because the closing time was at 3 o'clock.
That's awesome.
That is incredible. I started laughing. I was just like, you got to be kidding me. He's like, nope. He's just like, that's what was said. Excellent. So a little bit of Catskill Mountain history. Pretty cool stuff. Check out the Grand Hotel. Check out that book by Bob Studing. Very good book.
Yes, indeed.
All right. So let's move on to my guest of the night. Harold and Harold Oakhill and his 14-day adventure of the Catskills. Now, Harold is a fellow SAR team member. I met him. When did you join, Harold?
Let's see. I joined in 2020, about a year ago. Over a year ago.
You were involved in some of the stuff before the pandemic.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it was right about that time. So it's been coming up on 2 years, I guess.
Yeah, so I've known Harold for about 2 years in not recently, it's a couple months ago, he went on a 14-day straight adventure through the Catskills. And we're gonna definitely talk about it tonight. I want to know what his plan was, what his route was, you know, and he told me a little bit of it, but not all of it. So I want to know all of it. So Harold, say hi and give a little background about yourself, sir.
All right, Stosh, happy to be here. Well, in terms of just general background on you know, being interested in the outdoors. I grew up in a very outdoorsy family. My parents loved camping. And I understand I was 6 months old on my first camping trip. Every summer was a road trip. We traveled all over the country to national parks and sometimes up into Canada. And we always camped. Every night we were in a campground in a tent. I don't ever remember staying in a motel on any of those trips. And then in 1970, my dad bought a 17-foot aluminum canoe, and a canoe trip in the Adirondacks became part of our summer routine for many years. So just being outside in nature and in a wilderness setting is just been part of, you know, growing up. And, you know, when you're introduced to something like that young, it just becomes part of what you think is normal. So I've always been comfortable being outside in nature and in the wilderness. And all that went hand in hand with my Boy Scout experience. I had a very positive Boy Scout experience. I was in Troop 42 in Red Hook, New York, which is right across the Hudson from the Catskills, from Kingston. And
it was a very active troop with great leaders and great dads who were involved, who were all very well versed in outdoorsmanship. And we did a lot of camping and hiking and mountain climbing in the Catskills and canoe trips in the Adirondacks. And it was a fantastic experience. And just to bring it back to the Catskills, my first Catskill hiking camping experience was one of my first outings with this as a Boy Scout. I was about 11 years old. It was 1968 or 69. And we did an overnight hike from Devil's Kitchen to Echo Lake, spent the night at Echo Lake. And one of the dads was a fellow named Bleeker Stotts. And he's one of these figures, you know, everybody has somebody other than your parents who was just a really influential person in your childhood. And for me, it was Bleeker Stotts. One of his sons was my age, was a classmate, Chipper Stotts. But Mr. Stotts was born and raised on an island in the Hudson River just south of Albany called Stotts Island, which had been in their family since the 1600s. And he just knew all of this fantastic stuff about the Hudson Valley and the Catskill region. And as we hiked along, he would share all this. He would talk about the legends and the lore and the history, tell us about the quarries and the hotels like you just did, and talk about the road we were walking on as a trail, what the history of the road was. He would tell us about the forest and the animals and the geology, and always in a very entertaining, accessible way. It was never like a lecture. He just made it fun.
Yeah.
And I just couldn't get enough of it. I was blown away. Just eating this stuff up. So by the time I got home at the end of that trip, at the end of that weekend, I was hooked. And I have been hiking and exploring in the Catskills and reading everything I can find about the Catskills ever since, for the last 50 plus years. So
excellent.
There it is.
So Harold, I know you're a Star Team member, and what are you, what number 3500 club are you?
I'm number 283.
283. Wow.
283. Yep. Yeah. And that was, I qualified on August 16th, 1978. On Cottersville High Peak.
Wow, 283.
Yeah, and I knocked it all off in 10 months. I started in December 77 and finished in August of 78.
How old were you?
I was 20.
Nice. Wow, excellent. Wow. Yep. You're a hike leader. I know that, 3500 Club hike leader, correct?
That's correct, yes.
Once again, you're on the search and rescue team. Yes. I heard you're doing the 420, correct?
Yeah, I am. I got caught up in that about 5 years ago. I learned about it and I thought, well, that's interesting. And it was good for me because I've been hiking and climbing, but I found myself just doing the same peaks over and over again, mainly because, you know, hiking with friends and family, you know, you kind of do what they want to do. And, you know, everybody wants to climb Slide and you know, Blackhead or something. And I just knew that there were these other 3,500 peaks, some of which I hadn't seen since the 70s, you know, and I heard about this 420 grid, and I thought, well, that would be an interesting way to just get back out there and revisit some of this stuff that I haven't seen in a while.
Yeah.
So I've been chipping away at that, and I'm now at 398 out of 420. So,
oh, wow. Almost. Excellent. You're getting there.
I'm getting there. I plan to finish in June if it all goes well.
Cool. If all aligns perfectly.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you miss one peak in a month and you got to wait a whole year. So, you know.
Yeah, it's and if anybody needs a reference, check out the 420 grid. You have to do what, every peak every month? Yeah,
it's climb every 3,500 peak in each month of the year. And it's not during 1 year, it's cumulative, you know, during lifetime.
Yeah. Also, we talked about previously about your number 283 for winter and your number 1244 for the
1244. Yeah, that's there's an interesting story there which we'll get into later.
Okay.
Yeah, there's 42 years and 3 month gap between my first winter 3500 climb and my last 3500 winter climb, which interestingly enough is not a record. There's someone out there who actually took longer.
Oh wow.
But yeah, I finally got the winter 35er in 2019.
All right. Excellent. So a lot of accomplishments.
The reason why I was just a three season hiker for so long. That's another story we can get into later. I had a really bad experience with a winter hike. So
yeah. good call. You told me to mention the Longstreth book. You want to explain that, and then
We're getting into the motivation and the reasons why I did this 14-day hike across the Catskills. So we can just jump into that at this point if you want. How did I come up with this idea? There's a few things going on. First of all, around 2017, I just wanted to explore more of the Catskills than just the high peaks, because if you just concentrate on the high peaks, the 3500s, you're really talking about the eastern third of the Catskill State Park. There's a whole two-thirds to the west with all kinds of mountains and trails and ponds and creeks to explore. And I wanted to get out there. So I started looking into a couple of other challenges, like the Catskill All Trails, which is to hike, every inch of every marked trail. The Catskill, I think, is about 350 miles of marked trails.
Yeah.
And then I read Alan Villa's book about called The Other 67, which is about the 102 highest peaks in the Catskills. Again, most of which are out there in the western part of the park. And the two other things that brought it together was in 2017, I downloaded the Avenza hiking app, which is kind of a tracking app. You may have heard of it. Maybe you have it.
Yep.
Downloaded the Catskill major map, which is the same map put out by the New York, New Jersey Trail Conference. And, when you buy the paper maps, you just get like little sections of the Catskills and you just pull out the map that you need for your day hike. But when you get the app, they give you the master map. It's not just little sections. It's the whole Catskill Park.
Yeah.
And believe it or not, it was the first time I'd actually seen in one document the entire Catskill Trail Network in detail, where you could actually zoom in and see it all. And I love maps. So I just spent a long time just poking around on that and looking at the way the whole regional trail network kind of was laid out and how the trails interacted and so forth. And I began wondering, could you just like walk across the whole park just on trails? Mm-hmm. And you almost can. The direct answer is no, because there is a gap between essentially the Western network and the Eastern network, but we'll get into that in a minute.
Interesting.
So I began this idea about just a hike across the Catskills began to germinate. And then also around 2017, about the same time, I read this book by a guy who had done exactly that. He had spent 3 months on essentially a Catskill walkabout in April, May, and June of 1917. And that's the book by T. Morris Longstreth. And that just really fired my imagination. I thought, man, I've got to do something like this. So that's when I began planning this. And just looking at my notes, my first draft of an itinerary is dated August 2017, but I didn't actually do the hike until last year in 2021. It didn't take that long to plan. Actually, planning out an itinerary was not that hard. It only took a few evenings, just studying the trail map and just kind of breaking it up into like 12 mile increments, and you could kind of figure out how long it would take. And it looks like it would take about 14 days to go essentially. Start as far west as you can on the trails, work your way east till you hit the escarpment, and then go north up the escarpment. And I chose to keep going north out of the park for a couple days along the long path to pick off a couple more 100 highest peaks.
Nice.
So that's
pretty neat.
So that was the plan. Yeah.
So like, how did you plan out like the days, how long it would take you? Is that like miles and elevation, did you guess?
Exactly. It's a combination of miles and elevation. And your experienced hiker, those are the two factors you have to look at as you plan out a day. How far do you want to go, and how much climbing is there, and then factor in how much weight your pack is and other things. And there are two ways to approach this, Josh, with a long distance hike. And it comes down to how are you going to get resupplied? Because you can only carry so much food and water.
And the one way to do it, if you're just kind of tramping and rambling, is to just hit a town every 3 or 4 days, or a grocery store or something, where you can pick up more food, and maybe get some laundry done if you need to, if you need clean clothes and so forth. And I looked at that angle first. And to make that happen, you would have to do a lot of road walking. And I just didn't want to do that. I wanted to be on the trails in the woods as much as possible, and to really minimize the amount of time walking along roads to get to a town. Now, Longstreth did mainly road walking. That's the way he got around. But he was doing it in 1917. Most of the roads were dirt. It was right at the dawn of the auto age. So there were cars, but they were small and not going too fast. But road walking these days, it's not very interesting and frankly a little dangerous. So
yeah.
So
and back in 1917, the trails weren't established yet that much, right?
They're not like we have now, not at all. There were some trails here and there. And he did climb some mountains. He climbed Windham and Slide and Hunter and a few others. He said he wanted to climb Peak of Moose, but he couldn't find a trail.
Oh wow.
Which is interesting. But what's also interesting is some of the roads he was walking are now trails today, because you know there were roads that didn't make it into the final cut for the road network we have now. So he was actually walking on them when there were roads that he could drive on.
Interesting.
Yeah,
that's pretty neat.
The other approach is if you're not going into a town and you're looking at the network, there the trails only go through two towns, Phoenicia. You can come down into Phoenicia on the Phoenicia East Branch Trail, and then just walk down the road and pick up the Warner Creek Trail and go over Trimper Mountain. And that was part of my route. And Phoenicia was a resupply spot for me. And the other town is Palinville, down at the foot of Cotterskill Clove. Yeah. And again, that was part of my route too. I just came down the long path off of Cotterskill High Peak. I spent a night in Palinville, and then resumed up the Warner, the Harding Trail.
The Harding Trail.
I did pick up the escarpment. But otherwise, the trail network doesn't really go through any other towns. It'll take you into Pine Hill, but then you got to turn around and hike back out. It'll take you down into Margaretville and Arkville, but then you got to turn around and hike back out. So the other option was a support team to meet somebody every 3 or 4 days who would be there with fresh groceries and clean clothes. And my wife, Emily, agreed to do that. So I got to say, before I go any further, this was a team effort. This was not just me. I mean, I was hiking by myself, but the only way I could have done this was with the full support of my wife, Emily, met me, she took me up there the first day and dropped me off, met me three times during the hike to resupply me, and then picked me up at the end. So she made five trips to the Catskills from her home in Poughkeepsie. She logged 835 miles of driving to support my 160 miles of hiking. So,
wow.
It was a team effort.
Yeah.
We were both in on this.
So when you were planning this out, how did you plan out your nights? Like, was it just to go a distance and then thing, or you have like a spot, you're like, I'm camping here?
Yeah. So since we're depending on rendezvousing at certain places at certain times, I had a pretty hard and fast itinerary. There were certain places, I needed to put in X number of miles per day if I was going to make it to, the next rendezvous point on time. So it was a pretty precise itinerary with pretty precise locations as to where I was going to camp each night. And, the good thing about the Catskill State Park is, as long as you're 150 feet away from a trail or running water or below 3,500 feet, you can set up a tent anywhere.
Yeah.
So it was pretty easy to do. And the tent I chose was a hammock tent.
Oh, nice.
Which is provides you a lot more options because you don't have to scrounge around looking for a flat level spot with no rocks and no roots and so forth and scrape away any foliage. You just need two sturdy trees 15 feet apart and you're all set. And there's lots of those in the Catskills.
Oh yeah. So that's pretty good. I mean, the hammock does really help out when you're you're out there searching for a spot and you're on kind of like a slope.
Yeah, it makes it super easy, Stosh. It, and I did, you know, a number of campouts with it beforehand, with all the new equipment and gear that I picked up for this. I tested it all out before, so I didn't want it to be, you know, the first night because I'm trying something new and trying to figure out how it works. Everything was tested and checked out. And a hammock tent takes a little getting used to.
Yeah, it does.
have you been in one?
I do. I have two of them. I got one for me and one for my wife. She hasn't used it yet, but I have. I don't know if I could use it again because of my back.
Yeah. But yeah, I got the Lawson, which is the flattest of them. You know, it's got the minimum kind of banana curve to it. When you climb into it, it's fairly flat. There is a bit of a curve. Your butt is the lowest portion, and your feet and head are a little higher. And it's a little tough if you're a side sleeper like I am, because you really just have to sleep on your back.
Yeah, that's me too. Well, excellent. I have to check this out.
Yeah.
But you said it was a Lawson hammock?
Lawson, yeah.
All right, I'll put that in the notes.
Really good. I recommend it. But once you get used to it, it's great. It's really great.
Excellent. So that's good. How many, did you stay in any lean-tos at all?
I did stay in one once, the Biscuit Brook lean-to.
Oh, nice. And, great spot.
Unfortunately, the pad I brought wasn't quite thick enough, so it was couldn't quite get comfortable. So that was the only time I slept in a lean-to. Otherwise, I was in my hammock tent, which is put the foam pad in that, and it was nice and comfy.
Nice. So you said you started planning in 2017, and you went on the hike in 2021.
Yeah. So
how long did it take you to nail that perfect route down?
Well, not long. I mean, I had it planned out pretty well in 2017. But the thing is, you know, 14 days, 2 weeks, and you'd want, you know, vacation time. You want to take a few days off before to get ready, a few days off at the end to recover before you go back to work. So we're talking like 2.5-3 weeks vacation time. And when you're married, you know, you don't just say, so long, honey, I'm off on a 3-week hike, you know, because that's her vacation time too. We should be spending that together doing something that we both want to do. So it wasn't so much negotiation. It was just prioritization, because there were other things, other trips we wanted to take and things to do. So this just kind of went into the queue for a few years. And Emily was supportive. She was interested in doing this. You know, just given other priorities, it was actually, we planned it out and it was going to be a go in August of 2020. Mm-hmm. We all know what happened that year.
Yeah.
You know, by the spring of 2020, everything is shut down. And the critical part of this was as I'll explain in a minute, making reservations at certain B&Bs and inns. Yeah. And you just couldn't do that in 2020. Even in the summer, you couldn't plan anything more than a week in advance. So I pushed it off to 2021.
Okay.
So let me just get into how it would work. I mean, just to sweeten the deal for Emily, I said, when you come out to meet me, rendezvous, we'll meet at a nice inn or a B&B. So you get a night out, you know, I get a nice dinner and breakfast the next morning. I get a shower, a night in a bed. She gets a night at a nice place and a meal out. You know, I'm out the door the next morning and see you in 3 days. So she got, you know, to stay at a few nice places a few nights. The first one was the Beaver Kill Valley Inn. Mm-hmm. That was our first rendezvous point. Very nice.
Where's that located?
That is in Lou Beach, way out in the western part of the Catskill Park, kind of north of Roscoe. You know, go out on 17. And go north into the Catskills. It's up in there. Excellent. Blue Beach is the nearest town. It's a really nice 19th century hotel. It was actually a club. I think it still is a private club, primarily for fly fishing.
Oh, yeah.
But they do open it up to the public. So we spent 2 nights there. And nice. I met her there the first night. And the next day, I went out and hiked for another day. And she met me at the end of the day up near Adler Lake. and drove me back to the hotel. I spent another night there. The next day, she drove me back to exactly the same place she picked me up the night before, and I went off for another 3 days. So there was no cheating on my part on the mileage.
Oh, yeah.
And one of the advantages with this was that that day, I didn't have to carry a full pack. It was essentially a day hike for me. And this was some advice I picked up from some friends. I mean, before I did this, I put together the itinerary and I sent out an email to some fellow hikers who I wrote whose opinions I really respected. And essentially said, you know, this is a sanity check. Please tell me if you think I'm completely out of my mind. And if you have any advice or recommendations. And everyone was very supportive and came back with some great ideas. And in particular, Tom Artone, I think you've met, said, you know, you don't have to carry a full 35-pound pack every day. You can stash water. You can stash heavy gear ahead of, you know, when you need it. You can essentially what they call slack packing. You know, you don't have to carry it all if you have a support team who can advance some of this stuff for you. So we did a lot of that. So only about half the mileage, well, a little more than half, I would say like 60% of the mileage was with a full pack. Mm-hmm. But the rest I was essentially slack packing with just what I needed for the day.
So, you know, you said I'm trying to figure out how long, like, how many days were you confident? Like, I'm really going to do this. This is good. This is perfect. Or did it just go back and forth the route, be like, oh, well, I could be here and here. And, or did you just have it set?
I did make, some changes, en route. Let's see
let's go over that route. Let's go.
So the route is, starts out at Trout Pond, that way out on the western end of the park.
Yep, western end of the Catskills. That's in Delaware County.
Exactly right. Started there and went north on the Trout Pond Trail, and then picked up Campbell Mountain Trail, the Mary Smith Trail, called the Middle Mountain Trail, the Touch Me Not Trail.
Nice.
Past Adler Lake, and then. Get up into Millbrook, over the Millbrook Ridge, to Balsam Lake Mountain. That was the first 3,500 peak I hit. And then down onto the Neversink Harding Trail. And this is where I had to fill in the gap between the two networks. There's like a 3.5-mile bushwhack over South Doubletop Mountain. The state land. And then you pick up the Pine Hill West Branch Trail. And took that down to Route 47, hiked up 47 to the Slide Mountain parking lot there, and then over the Wittenberg Cornell Trail, you know, the Burroughs Range.
Yep.
Down to Terrace Mountain, spent a night at Terrace Mountain, and then down the Phoenicia East Branch Trail into Phoenicia. Night at Phoenicia, then up over Tremper Mountain, the Wonder Creek Trail. And you'd hit the Eastern Devil's Path, through the Eastern Devil's Path, those peaks, and then down into Plattekill Clove, and then up over Cotterskill, down into Cotterskill Clove, and then up to North-South Lake, up the escarpment, all the way up to the end of the escarpment of Route 23, which is where you leave the park, and then another 2 days on up over on the Long Trail.
Oh, wow.
That's 160 miles. And I just planned it all out and then figured out a way to do that in 14 days. And it worked out almost perfectly. There were two changes. Well, a couple of changes. I was going to do a few side trips to knock off some 100 highest, like Cradle Rock Ridge and another one. And I got there and said, no, I don't want to do that. So I just walked on by. I did take a little side trip to knock off Barkaboom, which is just a little bushwhack from Adler Lake. But coming down the, off of South Doubletop. I just got to get the trail name here just a minute.
Oh, the Pine Hill West Branch or?
Yeah, Pine Hill West Branch, exactly right. Continue on the, on that ridge there and bushwhack over fir and, spruce and hemlock mountain and camp up there just above the parking lot for Slide Mountain. But And this day started by Tunis Pond out on the Hardenberg, Neversink Hardenberg Trail. It had rained the night before, so everything was wet. And doing that bushwhack up and over Double Top Mountain, I mean, every leaf had like a teaspoon of water on it. So everything I touched would just come on to me. And by the time I got done with that, I was soaked.
Oh, man.
And so that's it. I'm done with bushwhacking for the day. I'm just going to go on down the Pine Hill West Branch Trail down to Route 47. And there's a few campsites along the West Branch of the Neversink, and I'll just camp down there. So went on down, you know, past the Bisca Brook lean-to, and got about a mile from the end of the trail, and I just got caught in a God almighty downpour. I mean, it just poured and poured and poured like I'd never seen it before. And I thought, man, I don't want to set up camp in this mess. It's going to be like mud puddles down there. It's going to be like a lake. The Bisca Brook lean-to, it's like a mile behind me. I'm going to turn around and go back and spend the night there, which is what I did. Wow. And of course, by the time I got to the lean-to, it stopped raining. It was a chance just to hang everything up around the lean-to and just let it dry out. But the thing is, that put me 5.5 miles out of position for the next morning, because I wanted to be just above the Slide Mountain parking lot. So I just got up early and booked it down the trail to Route 47. And which is a 3.5 mile hike up the road, did that in like an hour. And by the time I got on top of Slide Mountain, I was back on schedule.
Nice.
Now, the second big gap was on the Warner Creek Trail. And I got to say that the day before, I had come down from Terrace Mountain down to Phoenicia. And that was the day the Hurricane Ida came through the region. You may remember Hurricane Ida. So that was an all-day rain, and by the time I got to Phoenicia again, I was soaked again. But fortunately, that was a night at the Bell B&B in Phoenicia, right there in the middle of town. So I had a chance to, you know, get a shower and dry out. The next day was up and over the Warner Creek Trail, and I got up super early that morning and took my wife's car and took all my heavy equipment up to Mink Hollow, as you were talking about earlier. And I had what's called a dry bag, which is like a big heavy duffel that's waterproof and it's camouflaged. And I put everything that I wouldn't need for the day in there, you know, the tent, the stove, the sleeping bag, my food, most of my water and stuff. And it's a camouflage bag. And I just, you know, walked up the trail into the woods about 100 feet and hit it near where I wanted to camp that night. Drove back down to Phoenicia, said goodbye to my wife and walked on down the road. So got up and over Trumper Mountain and down to Warner Creek. And the trail crosses Warner Creek there. Well, this is the day after Ida. And Warner Creek was high, fast, and cold.
Oh, wow.
And I could not find a safe way to get across. And now I had all my clothes were in my dry bag, you know, up at Mink Hollow. So I didn't have anything to change into if I got really wet, and the water was about up to my thighs, what it looked like.
Wow.
You know, high enough to really knock you down if you lost your footing, and it was running fast. And everything that we've learned about hypothermia and search and rescue just running through my head. I said, man, yeah. And it was a cold day too. And I thought, if this thing knocks me down and I get soaked, I am really setting myself up for hypothermia here, because I have nothing dry to change into. And it's just going to be a bad scene. So I turned around.
Oh, wow.
And I hiked back up to a call there where another trail comes in called the Willow Trail.
Oh, that's a great trail.
Yeah. And there's remarkably good cell service up there. And I called my daughter, Sarah, who lives in Kingston, and asked, hey, are you free? and asked if she would come up and meet me at the Willow post office and just to give me a ride around to Mink Hollow. And she said, sure. And that's what she did. So there's like this 7 mile gap in the middle of the hike that I didn't do because of the water was just so high on Warner Creek. And I'm happy with it. I think I made the right call.
Yeah. At least you're honest.
Yeah.
So basically, so the Warner Creek, I could see the trail. Was the gap from the Warner Creek all the way to the plateau?
So I didn't get Edgewood Mountain. I didn't get Plateau Mountain.
Okay. And you started back at Mancala the next day?
Yeah, I just went up Mancala the next day. Yeah.
Okay.
And again, I needed to be there because David DeForest and his wife, Kristen, you know, David, he's on search and rescue.
Yep.
They were going to join me just for the climb over Slide Mountain. That was the only time I had a companion on the whole trip. David and Kristen met me there for that. So I needed to be there just to honor their commitment for that.
Yeah. Cool.
So they met me at the lean-to there in Mink Hollow that morning, next morning.
Wow. That's crazy.
So those are the two big changes to the itinerary.
So basically it was from Trout Pond all the way over to 23, or did you keep going?
23. Yeah. After Route 23, you know, you follow the long path and there's a bunch of parcels up there. The Mount Hayden State Forest, the Mount Pisgah State Forest, Ashland Pinnacle State Forest, and Hunterfield State Forest. It's kind of a patchwork of state lands that the Long Trail goes through.
Yep.
And that was the last 2 days of my hike, was just working my way through that. So I wanted to catch, Richfield and Huntersfield.
So Mountain. That's where
Richmond
you ended?
Richmond Mountain and Huntersfield. Yeah, I ended just west of Huntersfield Mountain.
Nice. I think that's still the park, buddy.
It's outside the state park.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. When you hit 23, that's where the state park boundary is.
Oh, okay. I'm just looking at it on the map. Oh, cool. Awesome. That is wicked. Oh yeah, I see it now. At the most heaviest times, what was in your pack? Like how did you plan your meals and stuff?
Yeah. So that was a big part of the planning too. Getting down to the nitty gritty. I read somewhere that, your pack should not weigh more than 20% of your body weight.
Yep.
So for me, that was 35 pounds. And it was tough.
That's tough.
That under 35 pounds. I, to be honest, it was up close. It was around 40 when I had a full complement of food and water and everything. It was about 40 pounds. So a little heavier. The heaviest thing was probably the tent. And, food and water, of course, hydration.
Do you filter anything?
I had a filter and I did rely on springs and streams for water, but I always filtered it. And I always tried to use that water for cooking. So it would get boiled, you know, for the soup and the oatmeal and the coffee and so forth.
Good.
And I also, I suffer from leg cramps if I'm not careful, and I can, manage that with stretching, and also I take a daily supplement of potassium, supplement of electrolytes, and I find a 20 ounce bottle of Gatorade every day helps with that. So a bottle of Gatorade a day was part of my hydration plan as well. So nice. All that adds up, all that weight. I tried to keep it as low as possible. My stove was MRI. The pocket rocket.
Oh yeah,
a little tiny thing, which is awesome. I really recommend that.
Yeah, I got a jet boil. It's like this. It's very similar.
Yeah, exactly. Initially, I'll talk about bear bags for a minute. Initially, the heaviest thing was this bear can I bought. And again, I did a lot of research and read a lot of reviews, and decided to go with what's called the bear canister.
Mm-hmm.
Which was the most bear proof thing out there. This thing weighed almost 3 pounds, which is like 10% of the weight I want to carry with this bear bag. And it's big. It takes up a huge amount of space in the pack. Obviously you can put stuff into it, but it's just this big heavy presence. And I checked that out on a weekend hike once, and it was just a pain.
Yeah, it's a nuisance.
I rethought that, and I decided to go with what's called an Ursac, which is a bear bag. And that only weighs 7.6 ounces. So nice. That's what I use there.
And, is that the one you hang in the air, or do you?
Yeah, it's something you have to hang. That's part of the defense. First of all, it's made of Kevlar, which is what they make bulletproof vests out of. So it's super tough, and the bear can't chew through it. Nothing can chew through it. And then inside is a real heavy Ziploc bag. It's like 3 mil thick.
So it's odor can't get through it. And there are three zip locks across the top. So no odors can escape that. And then of course you hang it in a tree, 10 feet off the ground, 6 feet away from the trunk of the tree is the recommended. So the joke is, the bear can't reach your food. He can't smell your food. He can't chew through the bag for your food. So he eats you instead.
Nice. Yeah.
And of course it's called a bear bag, but the bear is only part of the problem. And your biggest worry is really it's the chipmunks and the mice and the porcupines and the raccoons and the bugs and it's everybody else. They all want a piece of what you got there. And the thing is, it's anything with an odor. If they can smell it, they want to see what it tastes like.
Yep.
So anything that goes in there, the sunscreen, the chapstick. Remember back in the day of film cameras. Remember film cameras, Josh?
Yeah.
35 millimeter film. That has a scent to it, has a smell. So we used to put the film into the bear bag too, because otherwise they'd go tearing through your pack looking for that.
Wow. Yeah, so the mice are the ones that are freaking little rascals,
Of course. Exactly. It's those little guys you got to worry about. The bears are nothing. Yeah. And I got to say, I hung the bear bag every night I was out, and it was still there the next morning. No sign of anybody, any bears, or no bear paw prints around in the mud or anything. So, and I never heard anything at night in terms of wildlife. It was a pretty boring trip. I saw a total of 3 deer. I think, a couple of squirrels and some chipmunks. And that was about it for mammals.
No pheasants?
No, I don't think I even flushed a pheasant or a grouse or anything on that trip. I heard owls almost every night.
Oh, beautiful.
I saw a bear scat, especially up in the western, the northern Catskills, a lot of bear scat. But never saw or heard a bear. In the western part of the park, it was red eft season, those little red newts, I guess they are, little salamanders. I really had to watch my step. I just had to watch the ground to avoid stepping on them. They were like underfoot with every other step.
Yeah.
But I think it was the season. It was a really wet August, and I think it was they liked that.
Yeah.
And the other thing was spiders.
Oh.
Cobwebs. It was just like a constant theme, constantly. If it wasn't raining, I was brushing cobwebs away. And a couple of times I just walked into one, came face to face with some stupid spider.
Oh, God. But, biggest fear.
yeah, exactly. People go on and on about bears. I ain't worried about bears and wildcats. And it's not the big animals you have to worry about. Bears, they don't want anything to do with us. They hear us coming, they take off.
Yep.
It's the little critters you got to worry about. You're more likely to be stung by a wasp than attacked by a bear. So are you carrying Benadryl in your pack? You're more likely to be bitten by a tick than a bear. So did you permethrin your boots and socks and pants before you went on a hike? It's the little buggers that are going to get you.
Exactly. It's a good point to make that, the little critters, especially at night.
Yeah.
So in terms of difficulty, I wouldn't say rate it. Did it go the western side's pretty easy as in terms of elevation and terrain, but it's also a pain in the ass because of also it's not well maintained.
I found that not to be true, which is surprising. I was expecting that too. I was expecting overgrown trails that no one had walked on in like 6 months and missing trail markers. And I have to give the Catskill Trail System an A. I saw almost no litter, very little blowdown. And even in those western trails, they showed evidence of being maintained and used. There was always clearly a path through. If it was a grassy area, you could clearly see where the trail was. Mm-hmm. The trails were well marked. I saw very few missing markers. But the curious thing, though, is every time the trail crosses a road, and it crosses roads a lot out there, the state puts in a registration box, and there's a book you sign. And I was always very religious about signing in, just so I was leaving a path, if I went missing.
you could tell exactly how far I got. But I would open the book and there would be like one page filled in with entries going back for like 2 years.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
So people are using those trails, but they're not signing the registers. And I met very few people out there in the western part of the park. The only hikers I saw were just like within a mile or two of a trailhead. And, you know, they're out walking the dog or they're just going up to some nearby lookout to enjoy the view. Mm-hmm. I've met no through hikers or backpackers out there during the first like 8-9 days of my hike. In fact, I went for 3 24-hour periods without seeing another human being.
Oh, wow.
Which is, for me, it's awesome. It's kind of, you know, what I look for. Just being alone out in the wilderness, which is pretty cool.
Yeah.
I did see through hikers during Labor Day weekend. I was out there and I happened to be on the escarpment trail during those days. And so there were a lot of people out doing the escarpment that weekend. And I did see through hikers and backpackers, which you would expect on a long weekend.
Yeah.
But then, you know, next day, the Tuesday, I was right back by myself again.
Nice. So how difficult would you say this whole hike was?
Well, it all comes down to what kind of condition you're in.
Yeah.
You know, I think I'm in pretty good shape for my age. And I made sure I was in good shape. You know, I went out hiking every weekend in the months leading up and just, you know, made sure I could handle it. It wasn't that bad. I was doing an average of 11 and a half miles a day, which isn't that far, really. I mean, that's a pretty easy 8-hour day.
It's impressive.
Even if there are a couple of mountains in there, you know, that's manageable.
Yeah, excellent. Yeah, yeah. It sounds like, you know, you get both experiences when you hiked that. You went out west, you know, of the Catskills, which is pretty easy, flat, wide trails. Sometimes they were used for logging and sometimes they were used for four-wheelers and stuff and snowmobiles. Yeah. And then you get up to the steep, crazy stuff right after you hit Wittenberg and stuff like that. So you got an experience of everything.
I did. I was on every kind of trail you can imagine. And I'm glad you mentioned that about the old roads. I would say half of the trails I was on were old roads of some sort. You know, nice. Logging roads, quarry roads, farm roads, fire tower roads, estate roads. Even roads that were once part of the local, you know, road network and for some reason just never made the final cut when it became time for asphalt and automobiles. Mm-hmm. But much of the time I was on a trail that I could have driven on 100 years ago.
Wow.
And I find that fascinating because I love the history of the Catskills too. And I would just to keep my mind active, I would think about, you know, what was this road for? You know, who put this in and why? And what were they connecting? And I would think about the guys who built the roads, you know, back in the, whenever it was, 1880s, 90s, earlier. Because, you know, road building back then was hard labor. It was all done by hand with hand tools. So it would have been the lower guys on the lower end of the economic scale that would have built that. And that usually means, just given the realities of American social economic history, probably recent immigrants. So you know, they could have been German or Irish or Italian. It could have been African-American. And I would just think about who smoothed this way through the mountains that I'm enjoying now? Whose labor am I enjoying the fruits of? So I just like thinking about that kind of stuff.
Yeah, definitely. Same here. I love seeing the historic stuff of the Catskills. And then you think,
I understand Mike Kudish is now turning his attention to the history of some of those roads, which I think is really cool.
Yeah. Yeah. I got to get with him to get him on here. But, we kind of already went over, you know, what happened, change your plans, the Warner Creek, but that's gotta be a difficult thing, especially to turn around. You know, sometimes you get that, you like, I can push through this, but to turn around is a big part of yourself, of your inner self, to show your inner strength.
Yeah. But it does take a lot of discipline. And, I've hiked solo, ever since the 70s, you know, I did most of those peaks for the 3500 club, that first round of the 70s. I did most of that solo. Did the six solo back then. So I'm used to it. I'm very comfortable being alone in the wilderness, but I also know my limits, and I have a tremendous respect for Mother Nature. I'm always mindful of the fact that no matter how much you love nature, nature does not love you back. Nature doesn't care if you live or die. It's just a force you need to recognize and respect.
Yep. I agree. So what would you say? Was the Warner Creek the most difficult time in the hike, or do you have any other?
Well, it wasn't difficult. It was a tough decision, but in terms of physical difficulty, no. I mean, just, it was disappointing. The lowest point, physically and, you know, just kind of morally, emotionally, was, the morning of day 13. I had spent, the previous night up by the Elm Ridge lean-to, just, west of the summit of Windham High Peak. I didn't sleep in the lean-to, but behind the lean-to, there's this beautiful campground. It's just like a open grassy meadow with a few mature trees. It was just perfect for a hammock tent or any kind of tent, really. So I recommend that. So I got up that morning and went down to the end of the escarpment trail there, where it hits across the Route 23. And I've been fighting some bug of some sort for the few days, and one of those stupid summer head colds, and I just felt like death warmed over, just absolute crap. And I got down there to Route 23, and I'm standing there watching the cars and trucks flying by. And I looked at my phone, and I had service. And I thought, I really don't want to do another 12-mile hike over 3,000 feet of climbing with a 35-pound pack. It's like the last thing I want to do today.
Yeah.
And I looked at my phone and I thought, all I have to do is press a button here and I can end this right now. Emily will be up here in 90 minutes and it'll be over.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't press the button.
Nice.
One other thing I've learned from doing all this hiking and these long hikes is that no matter how deep you dig to get that extra ounce of energy or willpower, you can always dig deeper. And so I just thought about how nice it would be just to bail out. But then I thought, how am I going to feel 3 days from now, or a week from now, a month from now? I'm going to be really pissed at myself for having just, bagged it like this. And I thought about the people who I told about what I was doing. And they were all very, everyone was supportive and go for it. And I felt that, there's people out there rooting for me and I didn't want to let them down. So I just sucked it up and walked across the highway and kept going.
Nice. That's a different story to share of your most difficult.
Yeah. I did have that moment of doubt when it would have been just so easy just to pack it in, but I didn't, and I'm glad I didn't.
Yeah. Kept kicking ass. Yeah. So what was your favorite part of the hike?
The favorite part of the hike was those moments when it all came together, just like I had envisioned it back in 2017, when I first started thinking about this. And a moment, for example, like the end of day two, when I've been hiking across the Touch Me Not Trail and down into, I think it's Little Pond. There's a state campsite there. Mm-hmm. And the rendezvous point that night was at the Beaverkill Valley Inn. So I went down into the campsite and then just bushwhacked through some state land down to the end of a dirt road called Barnhart Road. Yeah, kind of came out of the woods right where the road ends at a farm gate and just, becomes someone's farm. And just walked down this dirt road. It's about 7/10 of a mile. And it takes you right to the Beaverkill Valley Inn, this beautiful 19th century hotel sitting on an immaculate lawn. And there's Emily sitting on the porch with a drink. And it was just like, this is just exactly the way I'd hoped it would work out. I just felt like I was like living the dream at that moment. So there were a few moments like that when things just rolled out perfectly, just the way I envisioned them. And it was really just the way Longstreth had done it 100 years earlier.
Yeah.
And he did his walkabout because he was mainly road walking and mainly staying in inns and what they were called boarding houses back then. I guess mm-hmm. kind of like a B&B today. He did sleep out in the open sometimes. He didn't have much of a tent. I think he just had like a tarp and a blanket. But yeah, it was. I just felt like I was living the dream, just tramping through the Catskills and just hitting up an inn for the night and then going out the door the next morning to continue my hike. So that was awesome.
That was some good parts. That sounds awesome. Yeah, that definitely, when everything rolls together, you feel good. You feel like, yes, it's going good.
Yeah. This is it.
Excellent. So if you were to change anything, what would you change?
I would definitely build in more downtime, because here was the kind of the one downside. I had this pretty rigid itinerary, and it was 14 days of go. You know, I got to get up at 6 or 7 in the morning, you know, go through the routine of breakfast and packing up. I got to get in the miles, got to find a place to camp, set up camp, and then, you know, set up the tent, get some water, filter the water, cook dinner, clean up dinner. You know, it was just go from 7 in the morning to 7 at night. And there was no downtime. So if I were to do this again, and I might, I would love to do something like it again. Yeah. I would build in some shorter days, you know, instead of 12 miles, let's do 4, you know, and just take it easy someplace or think of someplace really nice where you could just hang for a day.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, like out at Beaver Meadow, there's a nice lean-to there. Why not just hang out at Beaver Meadow and see if we can see some beavers, you know?
Yeah. Right.
So, so a little more downtime would be better.
Yeah, definitely. That, you know, enjoying that, you know, I understand, you know, you want to get through, but yeah, enjoying some of the time. You know, what the hardest would be with me on these kind of hikes would be leaving the viewpoints.
Yeah.
I mean, exactly. if there's a view, I'm just like, I got to stay here and enjoy it more. Yeah. That's the thing. But yeah, excellent. So
yeah. And that's cool too. A nice viewpoint and a good book, you know, and a bevy, you know, and just hang. So I might take that approach next time.
Yeah, definitely enjoy the view. I love the views. That's my favorite part about the Catskills is those views. Yeah. So excellent. Well, that concludes the 14-day journey. So I heard you had some other stuff. Thank you. And that's awesome. I'm glad you shared this with me. I'm glad you're on our STAR team and you shared your experience. It's really cool stuff. A lot of people don't do that kind of stuff. And a lot of people don't read the old books about the Catskills. So hopefully this will inspire them to check out.
Yeah. I really recommend that Longstreth book. What he did is just fascinating. I don't know if you've dipped into it or not. He was a writer. It was his career later, but he's got kind of a Victorian way of writing. He uses a lot of words. So it's not a fast read, but if you take the time to enjoy the way he uses the language, which I enjoy doing, he's got a lot of interesting things to say about the Catskills that would really resonate with anybody who loves the Catskills.
Good. I'll put that in the notes. Let me definitely highlight that.
Yeah.
Because I like highlight some stuff and make sure that it goes into the notes.
Yeah. And I love this one point where he was a fly fisherman too. So one of the things he did was go fishing.
Oh, yeah.
And instead of saying it was a week before trout season, he says, it was yet a week before the trout could legally accept the fly. I love that kind of, you know, lyrical way of writing. So yeah. It's a good read.
Rewriting it to make it sound interesting.
Yeah.
That's what to keep it going. So excellent. Well, thank you, Harold, for sharing that stuff. So I heard you had another story about a ghost or something.
Well, you know, 50 years of hiking, I've seen a lot of stuff. And I do have this one kind of, you know, someone asked me once if I had a Catskill ghost story, and I do have one like that, and happy to share it.
Please.
So again, this is, go ahead.
I said, please, go right ahead,
yeah,
please.
Yeah, so this again is in the 70s, and I was doing a solo hike, again, up to Echo Lake. Echo Lake was one of my favorite places in the 70s. I went up there to camp out a lot. And this was, hiking by myself, again, coming up from Devil's Kitchen along that, that trail that runs along, I guess it's Platte Kill Mountain.
Mm-hmm.
And it was going up on a Friday night right after work, and I wanted to get to the lean-to by dark. So I'm hustling along, and it's the sun is behind the mountain. It's getting kind of dim. And I suddenly had this unmistakable feeling that I was being watched. And, you know, we all felt that feeling, you know, the hair mm-hmm. kind of stands up on the back of your head. And I was like, oh God, there's something out there. And I stopped and I looked to my right up the slope. And there was this silhouette of a creature 50 feet away, leaning against a boulder. Now, in our collective consciousness, we have this image of Sasquatch, you know, that famous photo that someone took of this creature walking away and looking over his shoulder. Yep. I looked up and I saw that image up there, 50 feet away, a silhouette of something standing there looking at me. And I think my heart stopped for a minute. It was terrifying, just looking into this black abyss, not knowing what the hell this thing is. And a second later, it turned its head, and I saw the unmistakable profile of a black bear, you know, the snout and the ears. And I was so relieved.
Yeah.
Oh, it's a bear. Is that all? And he was standing up on his hind legs, leaning against this boulder, looking at me. And he turned his head and he turned and dropped down on all fours and just booked it up the mountain. You know, he just wanted to get away from me as fast as possible.
Yeah.
Well, I was really excited because this was the 70s, and seeing a bear on a hike in the 70s was really significant. The bear population of that time had dwindled to just like a few hundred animals. So seeing a bear was a big deal. So I was excited. I was wow. pumped. So great. So I hustle along down the trail again, trying to make some time before it gets too dark. But you know, then my senses are kind of heightened, you know.
Oh,
just
yeah.
had this encounter with something, and I kept, you know, this image of Sasquatch kept popping up in my head as I walked along through the gathering gloom. And I was getting up about to the junction where the trail goes down to Echo Lake, and the sun is set. It's twilight, and it's that moment when the forest seems to be kind of glowing, you know, that moment just before it gets dark and there's a mm-hmm. little light. It just seems to be coming from the trees all around you. And I'm hustling along, and this experience had just set me up, primed me perfectly for what was about to happen next. Suddenly in front of me, I see this kind of soft, white, fuzzy ball hovering above the trail. And so I, 15 feet in front of me, I stop and I look, I'm trying to focus on it. What the heck is that? And suddenly the air is rent by this loud, soul-piercing, woman being murdered scream. And this white ball shoots straight up into the air, wow. arches to the left, falls beside the trail with a crash, bounces up again to the left, and disappears. And everything is silent. Mm. And I was just, I blurted out, what the hell was that? I had no idea what I had just seen and heard. I mean, I'm flipping through the Rolodex here of, you know, meteorological, you know, extraterrestrial, animal, mineral, yeah. you know, lightning, ball lightning. What does that? I couldn't figure it out. Nothing made sense. I could not rationalize what I had just seen and heard. And now I am spooked. You know, I am just convinced I'm surrounded by who knows what, ghosts, yeah, goblins, yeah. and monsters. So I finally took the flashlight out. I've been trying to preserve the flashlights. I didn't want to run the battery down. And I think I ran all the way down to the lean-to there by Echo Lake, you know, just yelling at every shadow and shining the light up in the trees and every which way. If there was something out there, it was going to hear me coming. So fortunately, the lean-to was not occupied. I was glad to have it, you know, like three walls and a roof around me.
Yeah.
So I didn't have to crawl into my tent. And I just got the sleeping bag out and lay there, and sleep was impossible.
Oh, was yeah.
Thinking about this, what had I seen and heard? And, you know, I'd try to close my eyes and sleep, and this image of Sasquatch would pop into my head. And anyway, the animals weren't going to let me sleep anyway. This was my night with the wildlife. First of all, there is, as every lean-to, I think, has a resident porcupine that lives underneath.
Yep.
And this one had a porcupine underneath who had a huge collection of tin cans that he had dragged down underneath there. And he spent most of the night chewing on them. Around midnight, the White Mice Soccer Club arrived and began their midnight match. I was laying in the middle of the lean-to, and they would just run back and forth across me, just back and forth from one side of the lean-to to the other. It's just like a soccer match, just going back and forth. You know, every 5 minutes, I hear this going right across my sleeping bag. There was an owl circling the lake. I could hear him hooting most of the night. He'd be far away on the other side, and then right overhead, and then over here. And at some point, he caught something, and whatever he caught screamed. This kind of just gurgling scream of something dying. Around 2 a.m., two more porcupines arrived, made a thorough inspection of the fireplace in front of the lean-to, and then they joined their buddy in the basement and helped him sort his can collection. At 4 a.m., the dawn chorus began. That's the birds, you know, the first hint of light.
Yep.
All the birds wake up and they start singing their heads off. And I think every bird in the Catskills had come to Echo Lake for choir practice that morning because it was loud. I mean, the number of different calls was amazing. It was beautiful, but sleep was just absolutely impossible at that point. So that was,
yeah,
the long sleepless night wondering what was out there. So flash forward a year, another nice summer day, and I'm 30 minutes into a climb up Friday Mountain from Moonhaw. And you know that route. You go up and it's kind of an open forest there as you work your way up the slope. And I'm working my way up the slope and it's fairly open. You can see through the trees quite a ways. And ahead and to my left, I hear a commotion and look, and here comes a doe bounding through the woods coming my way. So I stopped and watched, and she gets closer. And I thought, well, this will be interesting when she sees me. I wonder how she's going to react. And she gets closer. And I think, oh, she's going to see me any second now. And she gets closer. Any second now, she's going to see me. She gets closer. And I thought, she doesn't see me. I mean, she's really about to run me over. And I said, hey. And all four hooves go straight into the ground. And she comes to a red hot stop 3 feet away from me. And she stands there. You know, her eyes are, she finally saw me. Her eyes are bulging, her nostrils are flaring, the ears are twitching. She's obviously terrified. You know, she's just come face to face with this two-legged monster. And we just stood there kind of blinking at each other for a minute. And I was about to reach out and see if I could try and touch her, when suddenly she cut loose with this soul-piercing, woman being murdered scream. At the same time, she shot straight up into the air, turned 180 degrees, hit the ground, and bounded off into the woods where she'd come from with her white rump, like a soft white ball, bouncing through the forest. And it all came together. That thing I had seen a year earlier above Echo Lake was a deer. I had come up behind it, spooked it. It screamed and bounded off into the woods. But all I could see was this white ball with her rump just kind of, you know, hovering there initially and then bouncing off into the woods.
Wow.
So that's my Catskill ghost story.
Wow, that is intense.
Yeah. But until that moment when I saw the deer, that really had me wondering for years to what the hell I had seen up there.
Yeah.
But all perfectly rational and natural. Now, except for one thing. And that's right at the top of the story. That feeling I was being watched. You know, everybody's felt that at some point or another. And I have no way of explaining that. It's just.
Oh, yeah. It's it happens to you. You're just like and you whip yourself around. Nothing's there. Mm-hmm. You know, you always get that feeling kind of like everywhere. It's not just
feeling. Or you whip around and something is there looking at you.
Yeah.
That's really weird.
Crazy. Crazy stuff. Yeah. So we're going a little bit over an hour, almost an hour and a half close. We're getting there. Harold, thank you for your time talking about your 14-day adventure and about the ghost story. That was pretty wicked. Yeah, both times were wicked. The 14 days going through the Catskills and the ghost story that wasn't really a ghost story, but it might be a ghost story.
Not a ghost story, but yeah, had me guessing for a while. Yeah. No, okay. Happy to have shared a little stuff. Happy to be here. And thanks for the invitation.
Yeah, man. It's great to hear other, I mean, I don't do much of myself on here because, I don't have these crazy stories like you do and crazy times of 14 days, straight days in the Catskills, but I'm glad to have you on here. I'm glad to have you on the SAR team. I'm excited.
Yeah, well, it's nice serving with you too. And it's a great bunch of people in search and rescue. I'm happy and proud to be with them.
Damn straight. Well, thank you, Harold. Thank the sponsors. Thank once again, Scenic Rock Guiding for sponsoring me. Thank the donors. Thank you guys for donating. Thank you, whoever is listening. I really appreciate you listening. I hope you're enjoying the show. Let me know if on social media if you want to hear any certain topics, and I'll see if I can dig my information on it. I know Harold wants to hear about some old railroads and some old lumber yards, lumber places, correct?
Yeah. I'm going to go back up to Hunter and do some more exploration of that old Fenwick lumber operation. So you ought to come with me. It'll be a lot of fun.
Yeah. Give me a date.
Absolutely.
And I definitely will do that. That's on my list, on my Catskills bucket list.
Yeah. Good.
Yeah. So subscribe on any platform. Look me up on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. And thank you for listening. And thank you, Harold, joining me tonight.
All right. It's been a pleasure.
All right. Have a good night, Harold.
Good night.